Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I've always wanted to help the audience take their soul to the next level, so I've partnered with Mind Valley and other amazing free courses on spirituality, mind, body, soul, longevity, wealth, and so much more. All you need to do is go to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of this show, its host, or any of the companies they represent. Now, today on the show, we have near-death experiencer, Jeffrey Olson. And Jeffrey has one of the most horrific and inspiring NDEs I've had on the show to date. After a horrific automobile accident took the lives of his wife and youngest son, and also inflicted multiple life-threatening injuries to Jeff, including amputating his left leg, he found the courage to survive over 18 surgeries and eventually heal both physically and emotionally. His story of his near-death experience, what he saw on the other side, and the courage it took for him to come back and to fight for his other remaining son is inspiring. Get ready to maybe tear up a little bit on this one, guys. Let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show, Jeffrey Olson. How are you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm doing great, Alex. It's good to be with you. Very good to be.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, my friend. I appreciate you coming on and talking about your experience and sharing your experience with our audience. And hopefully it's going to help some people listening on their own life journey, listening to your journey. So my first question to you is, what was your life like prior to your near-death experience?
Gosh, prior to the near-death experience, I was running an ad agency. I had played Division I football. I had graduated from college. I had a degree in marketing with a minor in psychology, and was running an ad agency as the creative director. I was married, happily married. We had two sons, and life was good. It was kind of it was like in hindsight, wow, everything I did worked out, was successful, and it was a good life.
So let me ask you, because so many of us struggle through life, and I'm sure you had your struggles prior to your near-death experience as well, like we all did. But why do you think that? I mean, your train seemed to have been going on a good road. Why do you think you needed to go through this experience?
You know, that's a great question. And I learned in the near-death experience that, yeah, our soul has a journey. And, you know, yes, I'd had challenges. Gosh, we had struggled to get our second son here. You know, right. There was infertility challenges. Work was challenging and hard and stressful. But the interesting thing is, you know, those are kind of at the very, that's just at the first blush level. When the near-death experience happened, and we'll get into all that, the whole facade was ripped out. You know, I mean, everything that I thought was success, everything that I thought was love, everything that I thought was goodness, suddenly was transformed in a miraculous way. And it was quite a journey. I mean, it took me 10 years to even talk about the near-death experience because of this transition, if you will. I mean, many people say transformation, but the near-death experience was caused by an automobile accident. It basically, it crushed both my legs.
Well, if you want, let's talk about the near-death experience, so we could just get into it exactly. So, what exactly happened how did that near-death experience happen, leading up to it?
Yeah, the near-death experience was caused by an automobile accident. And the whole family was in the car. We were on a family vacation. And, you know, one of the difficult things telling this story is I believe I may have dozed off at the wheel. It was a road trip. And it's been 25 years since that happened, I couldn't even speak of it for a decade. But it was on an automobile accident, a single car rollover. It crushed both of my legs. My left leg was amputated above the knee. It broke my back in a couple of places, which ironically didn't damage the spinal column. I still have full movement. My right arm was nearly torn off. My rib cage was damaged. My lungs were collapsed, and the seatbelt had cut through me and ruptured all my insides. The most devastating part of the accident is my wife and youngest son were killed instantly in the accident.
I'm so sorry.
And when I talk about the whole facade being ripped out, suddenly everything was different, and it was horrific. I mean, I blacked out during the rollover, but when the car came to a stop, I was completely conscious. The first thing I heard was my 7-year-old, my oldest son, crying hysterically in the back seat. And as a father, I thought, well, I've got to get to my boy. I've got to get to him. But that's when I realized I couldn't move. I was pinned either to the floorboard or the seat. I couldn't tell. I was struggling to maintain consciousness. I was struggling to breathe. I was in intense pain, but I was unaware of my injuries. The adrenaline, I didn't realize that. I just knew my son was crying and I wanted to get to my son. But that's when the brutal reality hit, that no one else was crying. And I became aware at the scene of the accident that both my youngest son and my wife were killed instantly. And that was a very helpless feeling. I mean, there I was, losing consciousness. I couldn't move. Half the family was gone. And Alex, I was driving the car. I mean, the guilt, the regret, can't I get those 3 seconds back? What happened? What happened? And it was in that darkness, and I don't share that to be morbid or graphic, but it was a hellacious, place to be. But that's when the near-death experience began to unfold. And I say that because it was quite a process. But in that darkness, I felt this light come. And I say that, it sounds ethereal, but it was like tangible light. It felt as if light came and surrounded me and began to comfort me in this horrific situation. And suddenly I could breathe. And the pain was gone. And I literally, I was thinking, how can I be okay? What just happened here? And then the interesting part of it is in that light, which felt like a bubble of light. It felt like I was suspended in this bubble of light. And suddenly there was no pain. I could breathe. And then my wife, Tamara, who I knew was deceased at the scene, suddenly she was there in the light with me. And we began to converse, and she was emphatic. She kept saying, Jeff, you can't come. You can't come. You got to go back. You got to go back. You got to go back. And she was upset and emphatic. And we literally had a conversation and made a choice where we discussed if I stayed with her, our oldest son, who survived the accident, he was banged up a little bit, but physically he basically walked away from it. Emotionally, he thought the whole family was gone. But we discussed the fact that if I stayed with her, he'd be orphaned. And we made a deal that I'd go back and I'd raise our boy. And Alex, I learned a lot about choice. here I was looking at the woman I loved more than life. And yet I knew I had a little boy in the backseat of that car. And we made a decision to that I was going to come back. And that was interesting. I didn't have to figure out how to come back. We have no idea how powerful our thoughts are. The intention. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going back. I said the most profound goodbye I'll probably ever say. And then I found myself moving about a hospital. If moving freely about a hospital. Now, when I say that, I was out of the body. And I have no concept of time in this bubble of light, if you will. I later found out people arrived at the scene. Spencer, my 7-year-old, was, he was banged up. He had bruised his ribs and cracked his wrist. With my extensive injuries, I had to be extricated from the car, and I was life flighted or airlifted to the nearest level 1 trauma center.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I knew nothing about that. I knew we'd crashed the car. I knew I'd said this profound goodbye. And then here I was moving about the hospital and encountering the doctors and the nurses and the patients and the families of the patients. I was aware of everything. And I was aware specifically of every individual I encountered. I mean, everyone I saw, it's like I knew them. We were connected. Even though they were strangers in this realm, I knew them. I knew their love, their hate, their motivations, their challenges, their choices. I knew them, and it was all wrapped in this absolute unconditional love. I was seeing everyone differently. Quick example. I pass by a nurse, and she seems completely unaware of me, obviously. But in an instant, I knew everything. I felt it as if it was me. I call it a oneness. There was a connection. I felt in an instant, as if it was my own, her abuse as a child, her physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Like, I felt it in a very real way. And in that same instant, it's like, wow, look at the magnificence of who she is. She's here in a hospital serving and healing. And I mean, it was, you know, I knew all this stuff, but there was no judgment. There was no comparison. There was just this absolute connected oneness that was infused with love that had no conditions, and not a romantic love, but a true, a true unconditional love. And then I finally came up on a body I didn't feel anything from, which I thought was odd. And that's when I stepped closer to look and realized, oh my gosh, that's me. But it wasn't me. I was having this profound connected experience, but there was my body. And it was a mess. It was a mess.
Now, okay, so at this point, so you're out of body at this point. This is out of body.
All this is out of body. And I realize, wow, there's my body. I mean, that's,
are you floating or are you standing? Or?
No, it felt as if I was just freely moving. I couldn't feel my feet walking or the floor, but I felt as if I was just freely moving about. And then the reality of that's my body. And that was a profound sadness as I looked at the, I had always taken my body for granted. And there was a realization too. I'm like, wow, what a miracle our bodies are. What a miraculous machine. I don't have to remind my heart to beat or tell my lungs to breathe or teach my eyes how to see. I was looking at this broken mass and realizing I've got to get back in there. I made a deal. I got to get back in there. And the brokenness of it, there was a profound sadness and a profound realization of, wow, what a miracle our bodies are. And yet mine's busted and I got to get in there. And again, just our thoughts, our intentions. I didn't have to figure out, well, how do I get back in? As soon as I made that choice, I'm going back in. Well, boom, I was back in the body, but back to the heaviness and the guilt and the regret and the pain and the trauma and the, I was ventilated. There was a big tube, down my throat, which was doing the breathing for my lungs. My legs were immobile. My right arm was immobile. They eventually tied down my left arm because I kept grabbing at all the medical equipment. But there I was in the body, back to all the pain and grief and trauma that I seemed to be separate from when I was out of the body. I mean, I was aware of what had happened, but it was a different experience than being in the flesh.
So was that essentially the end of your spiritual near-death experience as far as once you got back into body, or did something else continue after?
No, it continued. It was interesting. I was in the hospital for almost 5 months. I had 18 surgeries. Yeah, 18 surgeries trying to put me back together. And not only were the infections horrific, because my insides had all been exploded and they had to leave the wounds in my belly and hip wide open, I threw pulmonary emboli or blood clots that lodge in the lungs. And so I would be in ICU. I was in and out of consciousness. And there were times during that hospital stay where I felt as if, okay, I'm taking a break. I mean, it's like my spiritually had to be standing in the corner, you know, watching my body thinking, I just got to take a break. I can't be in there anymore. And then,
of course, were jumping in and out essentially for those 5 months.
Not for the 5 months, but early on. Yeah. And okay. I was kind of in and out. Interesting though, Alex, maybe perhaps the most profound experience I had was at the end of my hospital stay. And, you know, it's probably worth pointing out the most profound experiences were at the scene of the accident, you know, before all the narcotics and morphine and everything had been administered. And then at the end of my hospital stay, I had gotten out of ICU. I had gone through surgical recovery. I was actually in the rehabilitation wing. It was only a couple of weeks before I was to come home. And I went to sleep. It's funny. I was finally able to roll on my side. They'd finally stabilized my abdominal injuries. I'd laid on my back so long, I'd rubbed all the hair off the back of my head. I was bald on the back of my head.
So that's what happened to me. That's what...
My brother and my brothers were incredible. I mean, they rallied around me. I've got two brothers. They rallied around me, and my youngest brother, you know, took in my surviving son just like he was one of my older brother, who was a trained EMT, and he would come in and even look after me in the hospital. I mean, there was a point where the nurses were throwing up because of the abdominal wounds, and they had to pack them every day and then strip out the gauze. And he was there at one point, and he said, "Look, I'll do it. I'll take care of my little brother. You guys go throw up, and we'll do this thing, you know." But it was at the end of this hospital stay, and they had stabilized all that. I was laying on my side, thinking, "Wow, I don't know that I've slept. I mean, I've certainly been, you know,
out.
I'd slept, but I realized I was in a peaceful sleep. I thought I'm peacefully sleeping." And I felt that light come again, that the same light that I'd felt at the accident scene. And I was not on any narcotics at this point. I was simply taking some Tylenol for pain. But that light surrounded me. I had that same lift, you know, that I'd felt at the accident. It felt as if I was rising above the hospital bed. But at this point, the light dispersed. It like a fog off of a lake. It went away, and I was in the most incredible, beautiful place. You know, people say heaven or the spirit world or the other side. I mean, the only word that comes close to what I was experiencing is I was home. I was home. I was so welcoming. It felt so familiar. And I can't emphasize, it was such a physical experience. I mean, here I am out of the body or you know, in spirit or the soul. But it felt so physical. I could literally feel the energy of the ground underneath my feet. And I had both feet. You know, they had amputated and everything that had gone on in this realm. But in that realm, I was whole. And I began to run. And I could feel the intelligence in my calves and my thighs. It was such a physical experience. I don't know how to explain that. But I was running gleefully thinking, I'm home. It felt so welcoming, and I had the knowing. I knew I'm not here to stay. And at that same time, there was this corridor off to the left, and I knew intuitively I'm to go that way. And I began working my way down this corridor. And at the end of the corridor was a crib. Now, Griffin, my little son that we lost in the accident, he was just a toddler. He was still sleeping in a crib at the time of the accident. He was 14 months old. And I had been tormented. What had happened to him is his car seat had broken apart, and he had been ejected from the car. And I was aware of that at the scene. And I'd just been tormented with the grief and all. So this crib's there. I raced to the crib. And I look in the crib, and there's my little boy, beautiful, perfect. And I, you know, sleeping. I don't know if you've ever picked up a sleeping child, but I picked him up. You know, the weight and the heat of him. I'm like, It's my little boy.
I mean, the smell.
The smell. And you know, this is exactly what I did. Alex, you know, you get it. I mean.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I picked up my child and I'm feeling him.
Yeah.
And the heat of him, and I can feel his breath on my neck. And I leaned over and I smell this hair, you know, I'm like, it's him. I'm holding my little boy and I began to weep just thinking, how can this be? And yet it was, I mean, there I was holding him. And as I wept, holding him and kissing him, and I could feel this intense presence coming up behind me, this overwhelming, powerful presence. And, you know, I grew up in a conservative Christian home, and my thought was, well, that's God. And I'm in so much trouble. I mean, the guilt, you know, that I'm thinking my little boy's here because I crashed the car. You know, his life was cut so short because somehow I overcorrected or lost control. And this presence is coming closer and closer and closer. And I felt it so close, and I didn't dare turn around, and I'm holding my child. And I have the thought, I hope there's some way I can be forgiven. And with that thought, and this almost felt physical too, I just felt these divine arms wrap around and hold me and my little boy. And it's like the lid came off. There was just this downpour of love and peace. And the first thing communicated is I had the thought, I hope I can be forgiven. And the communication was so clear. It was beyond words. I was told there's nothing to forgive. Everything's in perfect divine order. And I'm holding my child weeping, thinking, well, how can that be? And then I had what I've learned is called the life review. I began to see my life. You know, I saw my parents' divorce and the insecurities that caused in me. I saw how my brothers had showed up for me my whole life. You know, even when I thought my big brother was being mean, I realized, wow, he loved me that much, you know. And I saw things, and I was saying, well, that was a mistake. I didn't mean to do that. And this beautiful being that held me said, there are no mistakes. What did you learn from it? What did you learn? That was always repeated. Yeah, but what did you learn? What did you learn? And I even saw things and I thought, well, that was wrong. And I knew it was wrong. And I did it anyway. And the divine, God, whatever you want to call this being that held me, said, that's your judgment of it, not ours. We love you. You're as beloved as the child you hold. And it was this strange multiplicity, because here I was holding my son, who was perfect and beloved and divine to me. And I was being held by the divine. And it was magnified in a way where it's like, yeah, we love you just like that child you hold. And yeah, you thought you were messing up your life, but you were learning to walk. And everything was, you know, aligned in such a way. And I kept thinking, because of my beliefs, I thought, yeah, but I'm failing the test. I believed that life was a test. And this divine love communicated, your life's not a test, it's a gift. It's a gift. And to your question, why did you go through this? I mean, I learned such profound forgiveness. You know, I mean, there I was in the arms of the divine thinking, how could I possibly be forgiven? And realized the one to forgive was me. I had to forgive myself. You know, I mean, I can forgive pretty easily, but boy, I'm the hardest one to forgive when it comes to self-forgiveness. And there was a lot of that going on. Again, choice. And I'll wrap this up, but choices were outlined for me. I saw clearly that I could be mad at God, you know, because this accident happened and was allowed, and my family passed, and I was told that will be okay. We love you anyway, you know. And then I also saw that I could beat myself up for the rest of my life in guilt because I was driving the car. But I was given a third choice. I was told, and this was very interesting for me, given my belief system. God said to me, I want you to have your will. And I thought, my will? I always learned it was your will be done. And this beautiful being that held me said, my will is your will. That's how much you're loved. My will is always that you have free will. And I was told that you can give your son to me. You can exercise will and hand him over and release him and trust. And then you won't feel like he was yanked away. You'll exercise your, you know, free will and hand him over. And in all that love and all that beauty and all that peace, I kissed my little boy and I handed him over. And, you know, then I woke up or came to myself back in the hospital bed to the amputation and the wheelchair and the colostomy bag and all that was going on. And, you know, I grieved as miserably as anybody grieves, even with all the experiences. But that one probably allowed me to get through it somehow. Otherwise, I might be that guy strung out on some street corner wondering what happened, you know. But that one gave me reason to continue, I suppose.
So that is, from my understanding of having so many of these conversations, that near-death experiences, these are many times presented in the time frame, or out-of-body experiences are presented in the time frames that are needed to help the soul cope with what is going on in their life at this point of their journey, or they have taken a wrong turn and need to be thrown back onto the right path. That's from my understanding. You know, your story is so, in many ways so horrific, but in many ways so beautiful. And there's so many people listening who are struggling with a loss, struggling with a loss of a child, a loss of a loved one, loss of a parent. And they are angry at God or angry at what happened to them. Is there any words that you can say to help them along their path?
Wow. You know, for those that are hurting, I mean, when I was there, I won't pretend to know how anyone else feels, but I know how I felt. And like I say, perhaps this out-of-body or near-death experience was the only thing to get me through. They're not really gone. I've had two of the most powerful guardian angels. I mean, little whispers, and it's little things. I mean, it's not lightning, you know, lightning and thunder on the mountain. But based on my experience, death isn't the end. They're never lost. They're with us. They become our guardian angels. They watch out for us and look over us. Now, you know, my son, 7-year-old Spencer, the one that survived the accident, he didn't have a near-death experience. He didn't get any of that. I mean, he really struggled. You know, it's like, boy, mom's gone, my little brother's gone, and my dad's never going to be the same. And yet there's always light. You know, in fact, Spencer and I have just released a children's book. He's a grown man now. He's married. He's found a love of his own. And it's called Where Are You? It's written from his 7-year-old perspective of what, you know, where are you? And it's a beautiful book. He did a beautiful job on it, you know, outlining. I mean, he says this is for anybody who misses someone. And he realizes that, you know what, they live on through me. And I honor them in the way I live my life. And they're right there if I'm open to those little whispers, those little things. And, you know, he brings up everything from the stars in the sky to the smell of banana bread. You know, I mean, this is where he finds his loved ones. And the story has my story. I mean, there's so much into it, Alex. I mean, gosh, I healed. I was fit with a prosthetic limb. I learned to walk again. I mean, I limp and, you know, my body's still kind of a broken mess, but hey, I'm functioning and I'm working. And I even fell in love again. Gosh, I mean, an incredible woman came into Spencer and I's life, and her name is Tanya. My current wife she's the hero of the story. We adopted two boys, and I don't even call them my adopted sons. They're just my boys. They've just come to me in this miraculous way, as they all do. And things were rebuilt. It's like that. You know, I read a story once about these, this is in Asia, when pots break, they put them back together, you know, and then they fill the cracks with precious metal. And I feel like that's my life. It was broken and shattered into 1,000 pieces. And everyone has showed up, including myself at times. I had to show up for myself sometimes, but those pots have been put back together. And my life as a pot is filled. The cracks are filled with gold and silver and precious metals. And, my sons, all my sons, including the one that looks out for me, Griffin, the little guy I lost, he's my big guardian angel. But my sons here in this life, they're my joy. That they're the peace that comes. And I look at them and think, wow, it was worth it. It was worth it to come back as I watch them grow into men. And Tanya, you know, and her love, and she, you know, she puts up with me. And anyway, I know it's traumatic and it's been tragedy, but it's been 25 years. So in hindsight, I say, wow, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I don't know. You know, I mean, I limp around, but I got so much support and so many people that love me.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. When you were going through the life review, did you, because I've heard this from others, that you felt, did you feel the everybody that you were interacting with, or was it more of a passive experience?
You know, mine, I did feel some things like that. And these sound like such silly things, but I'll tell you what, that's what I learned, is that the little things are the big things. For instance, I played Little League baseball. I became a football player at one point, but in Little League, you know, when my parents were divorced and my big brother had taught me how to throw and hit the ball, and first Little League baseball game. And this is life review stuff, right? Right. And I actually hit the ball. He taught me how to hit the ball. But when we practiced, we never had bases. I mean, that was just in the game, right? So I ran, and gosh, I hit the ball well. I hit first base. I ran past second base, and I didn't touch the bag. So by the time I'm rounding third, the base coach is saying, go back. You got to touch the bag. And I ran back. And by that time, they threw me out at third base. And, you know, I was all of like, you know, 8 years old. And there was my big brother, all of 10, you know, 10 and a half, disgusted that I had missed the bag. And, I'm telling this from the perspective of, yeah, this happened to me. But the near-death experience, after the game, he made me run the bases. Time and time again, touching every bag, he'd say again. He was like, you know, he's like a coach. Truth. Again, touch every bag. And in my young state of mind, I thought, why is he so mean to me? You know, why is this is embarrassing? Yeah, I get it. I got to touch the bag. In the life review, I realized, wow, he loved me that much. You know, he never wanted his little brother to screw up again. He's like, touch every bag. You're going to get it right. And so I saw it from a different perspective. I saw, gosh, I was mean to a little kid in fifth grade that wanted to come and play ball with us, you know. And I saw that with a different perspective too. And I thought, how could I ever make amends for that? And yet, you know, it was all like, well, just be kind to the next guy that comes around. You can't go back and do it over again. But this is what the divine was saying. But what did you learn, and what have you become because of it? Not in spite of it, but because of it. There was no judgment. There was simply this learning.
Now, as you moved since that last near-death experience, have you had any other spiritual experiences or moments that reinforce everything that you've said during your path?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many. I'll share a couple. Like I say, I've learned it's called after-death communication, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Tamara, my wife who passed, she came to me. I was, when I began to have feelings for Tanya, I felt guilty about that. I think I have a guilt complex, you know. It's like, how could I possibly love another woman? And I went to the graveyard and I was angry. I was looking for a fight, you know. I'm like, how dare you? How could you leave me? Here I am, you know. And I swear, she came to me. I didn't see her with my physical eyes, but I knew she was there. And we were communicating non-verbally. And she literally told me that she had sent Tanya my way. They'd never known each other in this life. But from her perspective, she's like, this is a good woman. And she basically told me, she said, Jeff, you're a pretty good dad, but you're a lousy mother. And our little boy deserves a mom. that was very, you know, that was a visitation, if you will. But other things have happened. I've got to tell you, like when we adopted our sons, and I'll share this briefly, but you know, that was interesting. We didn't apply for adoption. This whole thing came about in a miraculous way. It was, we met with the birth mother. And Zach, my middle son, was there with her. He was just a toddler, and that was interesting because he was about the same age as Griffin was when Griffin passed. And this was difficult for the birth mom. She knew it was the right decision. Her mind was made up. She was pregnant with Aiden, and Zach was a toddler. Those are my two adopted boys that I just say are my sons. And she wanted the brothers to stick together. And gosh, I was close enough to my brothers. It's like, yep, I get that. We got to keep the brothers together. We sat for 6 hours, Alex, waiting for her to get the courage, you know, to hand her son over. And I kept saying, you know what, we don't have, it's okay. You can change your mind. We don't have to do this. I mean, and she goes, no, my mind's made up. It's just hard. But anyway, as she passed Zach over, she handed him over, and ironically, she handed him to me, not to Tanya. I had this profound flashback of me handing over my son to the divine. Gosh, all that trust, all that, you know, all that. It was, I don't know how to put that into words, but there's been flashbacks or little glimpses. And gosh, forgive me, the tears.
Hey, my friend, it's okay. It's okay. I'm feeling a few. I've had a couple already pop out as well as we've been talking.
Yeah, but you know, these little things in life, and they're big things. They're big things. But yeah, I've had these reconnections, which are more than deja vu. It's like, wow. Okay, now I see the soul's journey. Now I see what I was being taught, or what I came to learn, or what I created for myself. That was the crazy thing.
Now, how did you learn about that? That part of, because I mean, the concept of the blueprint, the soul's agreement, all that kind of stuff prior to incarnating. Where did you get that information? Because nowhere in the story have I heard that you were exposed to that.
That, you know, that was in the arms of God. And I didn't share that, but I will, because I was, you know, I was still kind of angry. I'm like, how could this happen? Why? Right. And I believed, why would you do this to me, God?
Why know, me? Right. Yeah,
why would, and I talk about this communication, that the communication was, no, you did it for you. You created it, and every player in the whole scenario supported your soul's journey. Even Tamron Griffin loved you enough to go. And Spencer, he said, no, I'll stick around and walk with you, Dad, even if you limp. And the, you know, my other sons, that, and I had no inkling. I wasn't shown my other sons or anything at that point, but I was, it became very clear that I had created it. And there was so much love that the entire universe supported it. And so suddenly there was total accountability. There was no one to blame. It's not like someone did it to me. My soul did it and embarked on the journey that it would learn what it came here to get. And everyone supported it in love, including the divine. And that was, that took me so long to even try to articulate. It's like, how could I say, because why would I do this? I mean, no, I would create a perfect life with no pain or sorrow, right? But somehow in that realm, I could see that, oh wow, how would I know joy without the pain? How would I know light without this darkness? How would I know health without the illness? How would I, I realized I'd bought the ticket to the show, and I wanted the whole four, you know, the whole full feature. Wow. I wanted the soda, the popcorn, and the sticky floor and the gum under the chair. It's like you came to experience all of it. And we loved you enough to support it. And that's in a nutshell where that came. And I've had a very hard time articulating about that. I wrote about that, and you know, I wrote a personal memoir on this called Knowing, but I tried to articulate things. There are no words, Alex. I mean, right. I could sit here and ramble on. I don't know how to put it into words, but yeah, the the knowing, that the insight that came in the arms of the divine in a moment, in literally the twinkling of an eye, it's like, oh wow, okay. But then it took me a decade to process it. All of my beliefs had been turned upside down and inside out. And yet I suppose my beliefs and my faith had been literally transformed into trust. There was so much love, and I didn't realize until I experienced it.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And now it's like, wow, if I can manifest that in some small way in my life or in the life of somebody else, maybe if I smile at that stranger walking down the street, it'll change their day. And that might be the most important thing I do any day, you know?
Right. Well, let me ask you, because there's so many people, you know, when the concept of you planned this comes along, it's a concept at this level, from this perspective, very difficult to comprehend. Why would you ask for what happened to you? Why would you ask to be abused? Why would you ask to have pain and suffering? Why would you ask to have loss, or, you know, lose your love? Like, why would you ask for this? Why would you plan something like this? Is there anything you can say to people listening that can maybe articulate and give people comfort or understanding of what the soul's journey is?
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I have learned, as I'm old and gray now, experience is the only true teacher.
Yes.
Experience is the only true teacher. And so, you know, I mean, I'll go back to my football days. You could whiteboard it up and every play all was day. A touchdown, you know, all day long. But until you get on the field and realize how fast a 4.440 is and how big a 230-pound fullback, you know, I mean, then it's like, okay, now I get it. And I think in many ways, yeah, we had the blueprint and we're like, oh yeah, let's do that. That's going to be awesome. But then we come to experience it, and experience is the only true teacher. And yet, you know, I do some work with indigenous people, Native American people, and they call this the illusion.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We've come into the illusion, you know, to experience what we're not, that we might somehow embrace what we truly are, which is divine and eternal. And that was very evident in my near-death experience. I was eternal. This was just a couple of acts in a play that was going to expand my soul in such a way that nothing else could do it that way. It was only by experience that I would learn it. It didn't make it any less painful, but yeah, I think experience is the only true teacher, and it's love that allows us to experience things.
Well, like Mike Tyson said, we all have a plan till we get punched in the face.
Well, and that's when I say the facade, you know. Yeah, you get hit, and yeah, I got hit, and we all do. Everybody gets their
Everybody gets it. Everybody, no matter how perfect from the Instagram world or the social media world that you think everyone's life is perfect, I promise you, every single person gets hit somehow. They could be billionaires and they still have something going on with them, or they could be poor as hell and they could be the happiest person on the planet. It's all relative. We all go through things, but that's the reason we're here. If you weren't here to experience what this dream, this illusion has to offer, this reality has to offer, there's no point in it. It's kind of like playing a video game and you just sit in the corner because you don't want to go fight the dragon.
Right.
You're just sitting there like, no, I'm just going to hang out here. And you're like, well, what are you doing then? Why are you even playing the game if you're not going to engage in what the plan is, this level that has been thrown in front of you? You have some orcs to fight. You got some trolls to fight. You got the princess to fight, you know, save on the other end, but you got to go through this dragon. But I'm scared of the dragon. Ah, there is your journey. That is what you need to follow. That's what you need to conquer. And now I might go even deeper. It is not the dragon you need to conquer. It's the fear you need to conquer. The dragon is just there to facilitate you conquering that fear. Fair enough?
I love it. That's a beautiful analogy, Alex. I mean, maybe we're all in a big video game, and yeah, the cave we fear to enter holds the treasure that we seek.
Joseph Campbell.
Yes, there you go. And, you know, I mean, here's where it shifted for me. And this may be useful because, boy, did I ask the why questions. Why me? Why now? Why both of them? Why the leg? Why? When I shifted the whys to what, you know, what am I learning? What is my soul expanding? What can I do with this to potentially assess to others? That's when it shifted. You know, when I changed it from all about me to the outward focus. And here's the thing, that took a while. I mean, let's not pretend that I had this accident, had a near-death experience, and I was okay. No, I had this accident, had the near-death experience, and I grieved as miserably and navigated my way through that and made all kinds of silly mistakes and poor decisions. And yet, you know, we got through the video game. We got through the level. We conquered one boss, and then there was another one. And that's why we came. That's why we came, is to play the game.
Yeah, and it's and I've used that analogy so many times on the show because I think it's such a perfect analogy of the video game. Because if you are the avatar in the game, if you're Mario, if you're Link or Zelda in the game fighting the dragons, there's a player behind the scenes who is playing the game, and you are the avatar. And that player is, in my analogy, the soul who's decided to go down this game. And then you get into much deeper waters, just like, well, the soul, that player could also play another game at the same time. And that's a whole other conversation.
that was the expansiveness of being out of the realm, but it's beautiful. Right. So what if I'm just the avatar here?
Right.
And who knows? I mean, I say God, you know, I mean, I was held by this beautiful being. I didn't dare turn around. My belief system gave me fear to turn around. Well, was it my higher self? Was it, you know, I don't know, but yeah, if we're here in the game as an avatar of our eternal higher divine self, then yeah, that's the perspective that perhaps we say, okay, we're going to get through this level and somehow we'll make it if we just hold on.
Yeah, and it is interesting because, you know, I know you and I are of similar vintage. I think you're a little bit older than I am, but we both know Zelda and Mario. Let's just put it that way.
I'm aware of those. Yep.
Yes, exactly. And later on in games, you could change your player. So you could come in as a girl dressed up with some cool, you know, guns, or you could be an orc, or you could be a guy. And you're choosing the avatar you want to experience the game in.
Yep.
So in many ways, you're like, well, do I want to experience this as a girl? Do I want to experience this as a guy? Do I want to experience this as being broke? Or do I want to have all the money in the world and have all the weapons and toys that I want to play with? Or do I want to start from scratch? And it is just, you know, the analogy kind of really fits what we're going through. And it's the equivalent of Zelda being upset because Zelda goes down the cave, gets killed, starts the level over again. And now you learned, you don't go around that corner because there's a monster in that corner. You need to avoid that corner if you can, or learn how to defeat that monster. But that knowledge, that experience, and it's literally called experience points in some of these games. Like, you need to build experience points before you can even attempt to fight some of these bigger bosses. So I don't want to go down too far the rabbit hole of the video game analogy, but
it's the perfect analogy. I mean, maybe that's why the human psyche, and we're not
built
human, or, you know, that's why we get so into it, because yeah, that's again just another representation of what we're in reality doing. We're here experiencing ourselves as not ourselves. And yet we're learning at a higher level by experience that expands our soul.
Now, you've mentioned a few times that your belief system, your religious beliefs, right, you know, kind of guided you through this process, in the sense of like, I don't even want to turn around because is that Jesus? Is that God? It's like, I don't, you know, that's the big man. I can't turn around. How have your religious beliefs changed since your experience and since your life journey, to be honest?
Well, they've transformed. And I don't even know if I would say I'm religious anymore. You know, I'm spiritual. I feel very connected. And it's gone twofold. I've seen the barriers that religion put around me But see, I look as new eyes and I say, you know what? Organized religion is not a bad thing. I mean, I don't care what you believe, you know, but to have a community or to have something that brings you closer to the divine. You know, I mean, if my experience taught me anything, well, there's something that's much bigger than we are, even, you know, and to connect with that or tap into that in some way is a good thing.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
But I used to believe, well, there's one way and there's one right way and I'm going to be right. And I was so committed to being right, you know.
there's like 2 or 3 billion people that believe something else. And yeah, obviously they're all wrong.
Yeah. Or, you know, or pity. Well, gosh, poor them.
They're not the chosen ones. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you get it. And then that would, you know, and now it's like, wow, that just exploded. And I'm like, every living soul is as precious as this little boy I hold in the eyes of God. We're all that beloved. We're all that chosen. We're all that beautiful and divine and perfect. And that's what expanded it for me. It was like, wow, okay, now I've experienced unconditional love beyond a word or a theory. And all of that, that did transform for me. It's like, let's just love each other and be good to each other. And even if we have completely different beliefs, let's walk with each other and support each other and get over it. You know, let's be more one. Let's stop the us and them game and become we. And that's when we win the game. You know, that's when we conquer the game.
Without question. And in many ways, because I came from a Catholic background as well. And I always wondered, I'm like, you know, we're not born our religion. We're born pure, essentially. And these belief systems are taught to us by society, by our community, by our parents. So when you choose to come down to incarnate, you choose arguably the religion that you are going to be taught, because that religion might have lessons for you to learn in this incarnation. It is a set of rules to play the game, that whether either you follow the rules, you reject the rules, all of it's a lesson. All of it is a teaching mechanism. But I agree with you that even a belief system in any sort of organized religion, there are so many positives in that to connect to a higher self. It's when you get into the bumpers of the end where it's all boxed off and you start getting into the dogma, and you, like, to the perfect example, you're being held by this being behind you and like, I can't turn around. Like that's limiting. Whereas from your experience, it is endless. There is no, it's infinity. There is no limits to the love and the support and the understanding and all this that you were surrounded in, but yet your belief systems was like, I can't turn around. And I just had to have, if you turned around, what would happen? Raiders of the Lost Ark? Did your face melt? Like, what's?
Yeah. See, that's just it. It's like, it's choices, even choice. I made the choice. Well, I better not turn around. That's the big guy. Yeah. And yet, now, wow. Well, okay. And I suppose an openness, well, gosh, what if I turned around and that was something I totally didn't expect, you know? Right. I should have turned around, Alex. I should have turned around. My son teases me, my oldest son, Spencer. He'll say, Dad, you can't put God in a box, you know? And then when I say, well, I should have turned around, he said, well, don't shoot all over yourself. He's like, no, you did what you did and it was perfect for your experience. He's become a very, you know, he didn't have any of the near-death experience and he's become a very insightful, compassionate man. You know, we've come to the same conclusions with two totally different paths. And that's kind of interesting, you know?
It's fascinating. And I mean, Jeffrey, your story is so profound. And, you know, out of all the stories I've heard, most of them have been, as far as near-death experiences are concerned, most have been lost within themselves. I haven't heard a story like yours where you had so much loss, not only to yourself, like physically, but emotionally with your wife and your son. And that's a whole other level of trauma that a lot of people can't comprehend. I mean, when you're talking about holding the baby and smelling the baby, I'm like, I'm a father. I get it. 110%. When you started telling your story, I was like, You know, I've been on the road on a family trip. I've kind of like dozed a second or two. It could have happened to anyone. And it's such a powerful story. And I hope this story does help people listening, dealing with loss, dealing with trauma, because, you know, people find this show, find these episodes because they are guided to them. And it's my job to facilitate these conversations, to share these stories.
Good work. You're doing good work, my friend. I'm trying. Keep doing it. Keep doing it.
I appreciate you, my friend. Melissa, I'm going to ask you a few questions. I ask all of my guests, what is your definition of living a good life?
Wow, living a good life. Being kind, being happy. You know, I mean, people say, well, your life must have been spared for some profound, you know, reason. And I say, yeah, you know, to play catch with my son and watch another sunset. And yeah, living a good life is living the life you choose, you know, choosing a life and embracing it and being that.
How do you define God?
You know, I was I was watching Les Miserables, you know, over the holidays here on it was on one of the channels, I don't know. And there's a profound thing at the end of, you know, the most recent rendition, the big full feature film. And it was also in the musical. But to love another person is to see the face of God. And if we could see the divine in each other, and probably most importantly, if we could see the divine when we look in the mirror, that's how I define God. God is in every one of us. And we are God, and God is love. And if we could love each other and love ourselves, and you know, from those Christian backgrounds, even Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, if I don't love myself, I'm going to have a hard time loving the neighbors. And yeah, I define God as, wow, I was held by a divine being, but boy, I see the divine in everything, even the trees, the water, the sky, but especially when Alex, I can look through Zoom. I see your heart and what you're doing and what you're creating. It's like, that's divine to me, my brother. That is divine.
I appreciate that very much, my friend. And last question, what is the ultimate purpose of life?
To remember who we are, to remember we come from divinity. You talk about those babies being born. Gosh, you know, they come in perfection. They come with so much light. If you've ever been in the room when a baby's born, well, I guess we all have, because we were in the room when we were born, but
don't remember it much.
I don't remember my own, but boy, I remember the others. And we come from love and perfection. And the purpose of life is to remember that no matter what we're experiencing, we are that. And to remember it, to put those pieces back together and embrace it. I was only asked one question in my near-death experience, and the question was, to what degree have you learned to love? That was the only question. There was no judgment. That was one question. Wow. To what degree have you learned to love? And I suppose that's the purpose of life, is to remember that we are love and be that.
Great answer. Great, great answer. And where can people find out more about you, your books, and the work that you're doing, sir?
Oh, gosh. Envoy Publishing, Envoy, EnvoyPublishing.com. The books are there. Both the books, both Knowing and Where Are You, are on Amazon. And I'm pretty primitive. I've recently just turned off social media and decided to just be in a real, you know, a real way. I think coming from your background, Mother Teresa said, if you want to change the world, love the people under your own roof. And if we can focus on that, but you can find books and videos at envoypublishing.com.
And is there any parting message you'd like to leave with the audience?
Choice. Choose joy. No matter what you're going through, somehow choose. Make the choice to see joy, to see light, and to be that, and it always reflects.
Jeffrey, it has been a pleasure and an honor talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your amazing story with all of us. And I truly hope from the bottom of my heart that it helps people out there listening. So I appreciate you and your bravery of what not only what you went through, but what you're doing and continue to do to help others, my friend. So I appreciate you.
It's an honor, Alex. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Jeffrey so much for coming on the show and sharing his story with all of us. Thank you for your courage, Jeffrey. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/189. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.